Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
So today, it's my pleasure to receive Caroline Welsh. Caroline is the CEO and co-founder with Dr. Dan Siegel of the Mindsight Institute in California. She has been practicing mindfulness for more than 40 years, and she started while she was working in Japan. And besides that, she has a really long legal career, so we can talk about the leadership side and mindfulness side. And today we will talk about race resilience right now with mindfulness, how purpose, pivoting, and pacing can support our professional and personal leadership. Caroline, welcome.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here today.
Thank you. So what would you like to start with today regarding mindfulness and resilience?
Let's start by my inviting those who have come into the room with us to go on a journey. I very much would like to have this time be as interactive as it can be. So I know, Stephanie, you've already invited anyone who's inclined to come forward and ask a question or make a comment. So we very much want to encourage that. I know many of us are suffering from Zoom fatigue these days. So if we can mix it up a little bit and make this interactive, and also I'll be inserting exercises. We have four exercises today throughout the hour that we have together. And I'll also be asking some questions.
So if you have, any question, please put it on the Q&A or in the chat, but mostly in the Q&A so we can pick up the questions from you.
As some of you may know, there is a book called True North, and that is by Bill George. And one of the main points he makes is that the starting point of leadership is self-awareness. So that's just what we'll be talking about today, because mindfulness is mindful awareness, and it starts with self-awareness. And then from the self, we go to others, and finally to our organizations. So this won't be hopefully just another feel-good hour. What I hope is that as we go, you'll be making some of these points your own. You'll be envisioning how they might play out at work for you or in your personal life as well. So my intention is to explore with you the concepts of mindfulness and resilience together with the three P's, which hopefully you might find can bring mindfulness to life for you. And those P's are purpose, pivoting, and pacing. Let's start with an exercise right off the top. please take a moment to settle, to fully arrive in this space. You may avert your gaze or close your eyes if you're comfortable with that. And just take a deep breath and settle in. Whether you're standing, sitting, some of you may be walking, whatever it is, just embrace that. And take a moment, a transition from whatever you were doing before you came on this Zoom. Maybe it was another Zoom, maybe it was something completely different. Give yourself that moment of transition to fully arrive in this space. For some of you also, as you take a breath or two, you may find that the breath isn't working for you, if you will. I interviewed over 100 women for my book called The Gift of Presence, A Mindfulness Guide for Women. And I learned quite a bit about women's and men's as well relationship to mindfulness. And so the first thing and the most challenging thing that I heard from many of the interviewees is that the hardest part is actually doing it. So I hope that this very brief moment we've given ourselves here at the beginning to get settled, if you will, and to fully arrive, will be something that you will be able to use when you're in between meetings or going from your work mode to your at-home mode, whatever those many transitions are during the day. One of the myths that I heard when I was conducting my interviews is that there are those of us who think we need to have a quiet garden or a cushion or a special space for our mindfulness practices. One of the takeaways today will be that the informal practices we can conduct are as important as the formal practices. So I would like to encourage you to see how it might work for you to actually expand your notion of what a mindfulness practice can look like. While we're talking about expansion, I would also like to invite you to expand what your notion is of a leader. I think many of us, especially for women, it is sometimes hard to embrace that we're actually a leader. And I hope not to limit leadership to what many of us often think about, a CEO or C-suite position, a manager. But in fact, a leader is that influential person in the company, in the community, in the family. And I'm pretty sure if you took a moment right now, and let's do that, and perhaps Stephanie, we could collect some words in the chat or in your Q&A, wherever you're collecting them, where we can hear from those who are with us. In what role do they play as leader? A leader in what environment right now? And I also want to say that you'll be surprised, you're probably a leader in more than one area. But let's just bring some of that into the room and see what we have in our midst today.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to put it in the chat and then I can, or in the Q&A, and I will gather it together. Oh, work and family. Work, family, community project. Ooh, mother, coach, activist. Yeah.
That's amazing. Siblings, work, home, aunt, teacher, workplace, wellness, sports. Yay. I think a lot of my work is already done here because part of what I try to do in my workshops is for us to embrace and appreciate how much we lead and how much we have on our plates. It's amazing. And I think the responses we have here are a testimony to that. So please relax. For those of you who are inclined to be note takers, you could try not to be a note taker today and just absorb and just take in. Many of the things that I say today are either on my website or in my book. So you can just see what resonates with you in this moment. And take this moment. Again, maybe Stephanie will do another request for a couple of folks to weigh in. What is your intention today? Why this Zoom? Why did you decide to be here at this time? And let's see what some of the intentions are that are in the room right now.
Learning more about presence and purpose, pivoting at the moment, learn new additional tools for my clients, become a more present leader, have more assertiveness, learn pacing, step into deeper confidence.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Okay, I think everyone's in the right group. Yay. It's like when you board the plane and they just confirm that you're really going to Munich. And this is what we're going to cover today. So everyone's in the right place at the right time. So the next thing we're going to do, and I want to give you an example of this informal meditation. One of the persons whom I interviewed was a hospital administrator. And she told me that the complex she worked in had several buildings and bridges between buildings, as in enclosed glass hallways. And she said as she went from one meeting to the next, she would just take a few moments and sit on, there were benches lining those windows. She would just sit there and take that time. And that made all the difference for her as she entered the next meeting. I want to make a note about this concept, which I actually borrowed from my time in Japan. There's a Japanese word, which we don't have in English, and it's called yutori. And it's the space that you put between events. It is in part what ensures, for example, that the Japanese are, I should say never, but let's just say rarely, I hate to say never and always, late for an event, because they allow that time. As one of my interviewees in Hiroshima, Japan said, she said, "Caroline, that is not wasted time." It's very American to think it's wasted, because until I became familiar with this concept, I would pretty much book myself from moment to moment. So, and also as a corporate litigator for many years in a private practice, I was required to book my time in 12-minute segments. So very much attention was paid to productivity and filling that time. So if there's another takeaway for you today, it would be to please remember and see if this might work for you, yutori, to have that space just in between the events. So when we introduce the content today, I think the first thing to do is to lay our foundation with mindfulness. And we can, let's take a quick poll again, Stephanie. How many people, let's start with, consider themselves mindful or have a mindfulness practice? Let's start there. There are many yeses, so that's great. I am assuming that means, yes, I am mindful.
Yes.
Yes. Great. One of the interesting things, the reason I like to ask this question is that when I was doing my interviews for my book, many interviewees would say, "I am the least mindful person you'll ever meet. Just put your computer away. I have nothing to say about mindfulness." Mm-hmm. And then when they would describe to me their, for example, one woman was explaining how in the meetings she conducts as the head of her department, she requires there be no devices at the meeting. Some of you may be familiar with those rules or studies that tell us if one or two people are listening to the speaker, then others feel like they can go ahead and go on their devices. And there's also the studies that show us that if three or four people are on their devices, then others feel empowered to do the same. So her way of being mindful, being present, having those around her present, was to make it a device-free zone. So there was a basket outside of the room and the devices were left there. So this is an example, and she didn't consider herself mindful, but in fact, this is mindfulness in action. Another example, I interviewed a woman who was visiting her elderly mother weekly and had to make a drive of 2 hours. And she said that during that time, she just tries to take in all the sights along the roadway as she goes. She feels her hands on the steering wheel of the car. These are what we call sensory experiences. And they are so magical because they get us out of our thinking. You may have heard the term monkey mind. And that's quite an apt description of what's going on in our minds, because we have endless thought loops and thought safaris. If you take a moment to think about the thoughts that you find yourself having, you might be surprised, or perhaps not, to note that the star of these narratives is you. These are the things that we failed to do in the past, our wish for a perfect past. These are the things we imagine we're doing in this imagined future that very likely will not come to be. So we actually reserve very little time for the present. In fact, just 50%. So the rest of the time we're off on a thought safari. One thing that I found quite empowering when I was looking more deeply at what goes on in our brain when we are more present within our senses is that we activate the side sensory circuits in our brain. So our default mode network then, when it's focused and activated on these side circuits, the midline circuits become less activated. So the safaris and those movies starring us have to recede. And the experience of the present, of our hands on the steering wheel, of listening to our colleagues on the other end of the phone call, that becomes the focus of our attention. So perhaps this might be a good time, Stephanie, to just see within the room if there are a couple of examples of everyday being present, being mindful, if there's something one of our participants would like to share.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the meantime, I've seen some question, someone asking if you can spell the name in Japanese that you were talking about.
Oh, yes.
Taking breaks. Yeah.
Of course. It's Yutori, which is Yutori. And if you Google that, you'll get the Japanese katakana and kanji for it in the translation.
Perfect.
Okay. So what are we seeing for
So we see drinking my coffee and eating meals without scrolling on my phone or multitasking and just being present, which is quite something nowadays.
Quite unusual.
Yeah. My boyfriend and I have dinner at the table every night without phones. Mm-hmm. opening the bathroom window first thing to feel today's air.
Beautiful.
Walking my dog on our local golf course every morning. Enjoy scenery on daily walks. Shower in the dark so I can drop into the sensation and eliminate visual distraction. 5-minute body scans. Yeah, seeing what's new.
I think we're ready to move on.
Yes.
This is a class of mastery.
It
and
like.
I love that the participants have such a keen sense of what mindfulness is. And I'd add here that the studies confirm that being present, even for a task that we don't like, such as paying our bills, can bring us more well-being than not being present for those tasks. And I found that also a very empowering lesson. And I'm always encouraged when there's science to back up some of these theories. And as many of you likely know, we are having an exponential growth in research that confirms various things we're learning about the power and benefits of mindfulness. I'm going to go through four features now of something called VUCA times. You may have heard of this term. It's V-U-C-A. And I think it'll kind of set the stage for us for what we now globally in the midst of a pandemic, and here domestically in the United States, a lot of uncertainty with an election and with our renewed devotion to social justice. So all of this is a little bit more tumultuous than usual. And VUCA stands for volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous times. That pretty much sums it up. If you look at volatile, and I mean volatile, not only in our organizations, I mean the rapid changes, unpredictableness of the change, dramatic things make it very hard for organizations to plan and for us to lead an organization in its planning. Uncertainty, unprecedented. We haven't lived through times like this. And we, our brains love patterns. We like to be able to look at the past, at what's happened, so that we can predict the future. But we can't do that right now. So you could say that our brains are on furlough. If you've been wondering why you can't get anything done at this particular time or during certain other stressful times in your life, it's because of this distraction. And we don't have our full energy because it's very challenging for our brains not to have more certainty than we have been able to experience recently. I call this a crash course in mindfulness because my book came out on March 17th, which was when we really embraced the fact that we were in a pandemic. 2 days earlier, the restaurants in New York closed. I mean, just one of the many signs that we were in for something that to date we had no idea about. So as much as I wrote my book with challenges in mind, everything there applies equally to what we're experiencing now. It's just that everything is more challenges, more unknown, more dramatic, faster. The complexity part, the C of VUCA, comes from the fact that we are a global world and that one decision affects many things. Decisions are multi-layered and complicated. And it might be harder to see a single clear path. So what we need to hope for is a sustainable, resilient way of being guided by our own mindfulness and that of the organization's mindfulness. Finally, ambiguity. We've always collected, in our organizations or even in our personal lives, we collect data and we like to make sense of things. So we're not strangers to ambiguity, but especially now, things may not make sense. And so this is another aspect. There are so many gray areas. So for this as a backdrop, that is the volatility, the uncertainty, the complexity, and the ambiguity, I want you to just take a moment to think about your own recent experiences and whether any one of these features resonates for you. And just put a little pin in that. And, you know, when we're finished here today, you can, and I would invite you to just go back to that and think about what role that's playing in your life right now. Because that may give you some insight into how you can best support and strengthen yourself through these VUCA times. So there's a book called The Mind of the Leader by Rasmuth Hogard and his partner, Jacqueline Carter. And in their book, they say there are three levels of leadership when it comes to mindfulness. And the first is the mindfulness for us as individuals. The second is mindfulness as applied to the people around us, the people in our organization. And the third level would be mindfulness as applied to the culture. And as you know, the collective culture is a combination of what all of the people bring to the organization. So let's move now to another exercise. Think about something in your life that's been bothering you. On a scale of 0 to 10, not a 10, maybe a 4 or 5, just an issue. It could be at work, it could be in your home life, and it's just got a hold of you and you cannot seem to break out of it. You just observe yourself when you do become present, realizing, oh, I'm ruminating again about that thing. So just take a moment and think about that, whatever that issue is, whatever that thought safari is. And as I mentioned before, it's probably like a little movie starring you, something you failed to do or wished you'd done or woulda, coulda, shoulda of some sort. So now that you have that in your mind, just see where in your body you feel that. When you think about that, where do you feel it? Some of us feel things in our chest. Some feel it in our back. Wherever your go-to vulnerable spot in your body is for that. Just think about it. And see if you can just soften that physical sensation, soften it around the edges by a little compassion for yourself, by a little observation of and recognition of the fact that these thoughts are fleeting unless we engage with them. And when we engage with them, we pile on, so to speak, or exacerbate the situation. So just see if you can accept whatever it is. Doesn't mean you have to like it. Just accept and allow. This is at the core of our mindfulness practices. And you probably know from your own personal experience that resisting difficult emotions or haunting thoughts only makes them stronger. When I was researching for my book, I read in The Telomere Effect, which is a very interesting book by Elizabeth Blackburn, who got the Nobel Prize for discovering the enzyme telomerase, which is responsible for the health of our chromosomes. And she, together with Alyssa Eppel, wrote a very interesting book. And in one of the passages, they indicated that the life of an emotion is only 90 seconds unless we engage with it. So I was very surprised to read that. And I'm also very much supported by that when I'm feeling, experiencing strong emotions or thoughts, to think, well, if I don't get caught up in this, it will pass. So in a nutshell, with mindfulness, we are cultivating the capacity and the confidence to deal with whatever comes our way. So within this container, if you will, we can hold the frustration we may have, the fear, whatever that issue is you brought to mind, you can hold that together with emotions such as compassion for yourself, gratitude, and other positive emotions. There is room for everything. And then, to use the language of Kristen Neff, we can soften some of these hard emotions, soften them around the edges. We're now, Stephanie, do we want to take any questions now? We are about halfway in terms of time. We could do that, or we can push on to the three P's.
So we haven't had many questions. Actually, some people are asking about the book you mentioned before.
The Telomere Effect?
I think so.
The Telomere Effect by Elizabeth Blackburn and Alyssa Eppel.
Okay.
Perfect. Yes.
Yes.
And before that, I mentioned The Mind of the Leader by Rasmus Højgaard and Jacqueline Carter.
Yes.
Okay.
There would be a lot of books to read today.
What's that?
There would be a lot of books to read today.
There's a lot of books. I'm sorry, guys. Look at me. This is nothing but books here. And this is only you're only seeing two columns. They're everywhere. I mean, it is kind of exciting, actually, because I love books. And I work at the Mindsight Institute, where we write books. And my co-founder, Dan Siegel's books are in 36 languages. So we have some beautiful covers. That is just an aside, but it's one of the thrills of doing a foreign publication, because the foreign publishers always send us the cover and they ask us, is this okay? And we inevitably say, we defer to you. Whatever the sensibilities are, however you're translating that into your language, and whatever color, whatever that palette is, that's what we want to go with. Whatever you think will resonate with your audience. So that's just an aside, one of the exciting things about public.
Yeah. So I think what we will do is, if you can put your question in the Q&A, and maybe we can follow a little bit and until we have some questions and put it in the end. I don't see anything. I think they're looking forward for what you're going to explain.
What I'm going to do next. Okay. Yes. And maybe this shouldn't be too distracting. I'd be very curious about where our participants are from.
Absolutely. And
I know for many people, it's the end of the day and you're in Europe, you're winding down. Others of us, we're about to have lunch. I'm here in California. I know you, Stephanie, are in Spain. I know our other co-pilot, Rachel, is in the UK. So we have a very international team here.
Indeed. I can see Saudi Arabia, Germany, Brazil, Russia, Florida, Estonia, Montreal, Greece, Italy.
Oof. Turkey. You know, this is doing my heart so much good, because I know that half of our world is introverts. So with the pandemic, at least half of us are thrilled. Finally, the world has calmed down. And for me, I cannot wait to get back to the airport. I used to travel 4 months a year for our work and our conferences, and I will be so excited to step foot into LAX and to look up at the board of destinations and just look at which ones have I been to and where do I still want to go. Mm-hmm. So I'm just looking in the chat at South Africa, DC, Italy, Turkey, Minnesota, Turkey, Colombia, Canada, Mexico City. I mean, music to my ears. Welcome to all of you. So let's move now to the three P's, which is the fruits really of my interviews for my book. I wanted to make mindfulness accessible through the concepts that might be most resonating when we have decisions to make or we are facing challenges. So what I heard from the interviewees repeatedly was that they were driven by a mission, by something bigger than themselves. That's what gave their lives direction. And purpose is arising out of what's significant for us. What are our valued goals? And so it will give direction to our lives, and in turn, it will provide meaning to our lives. I want to share with you a story you may have heard. It's the story of the three bricklayers, which I've heard a few times. But in preparation for today, I did a little research on it. And it turns out that it came from 1666, the time of the Great London Fire. And the architect, Christopher Wren, was charged with building and rebuilding over 50 of the cathedrals, including St. Paul's, that had perished in the fire. And one day he went to look at the cathedral and its construction, and he said to the first bricklayer, "What are you doing?" And the bricklayer said, I'm laying these bricks. He went to the second one and asked the same question. And he said, "I'm building a wall." And he went to the third one and asked him. And he said, "I'm building a cathedral with great pride." So I offer that as an example of how whatever our industry or our role within that industry, there can be a larger mission, a purpose, something that unites the team. And it's not something we usually take time to think about, but I can assure you that knowing what your purpose is with respect to something you're doing in your work life or your personal life can get you through the most discouraging days. And there is, as I suggested, there's plenty of research on this. And one of the researchers is Vic Strecker at the University of Michigan, and he wrote a book called Life on Purpose. And he suggests that we all take a moment and write down our purpose. Could be, my purpose is to be an open, loving parent when it comes to parenting. My purpose is to be a cooperative team player and solid participant in my team's projects. My purpose is to be an inspirational leader for my company. And whatever the purpose is that suits you, you write it on a piece of paper, and then Strecker recommends you carry it with you. He said you will have no more important piece of paper with you than that purpose. And that's really stayed with me. And I have to say that it has gotten me through some discouraging days, which gets us to resilience. With the VUCA times and with all the changes that we all face, there are really few things more important than being able to spring back from setbacks and deal with unexpected things. And that's what resilience is all about. And that is built when we are mindful and when we have the ability to look at things more deeply and to, even when we suffer from something that goes off the rails, we No. Okay. Well, this week, this month, this project, whatever it was, didn't go as we had hoped, but my purpose remains to continue to forge this new area for my company, or to continue to be a loving parent. I know, for example, when I think about those of us who both work and have school-age children and children on Zoom, these are really hard times, and you can have such a discouraging day if the technology doesn't work, or your student slash child isn't interested in a given lesson. These are very difficult times. So to just say to yourself, well, I still have my purpose to be the best teacher and parent I can be for my son or my daughter. This can go a long way. I want to just, before we move on from this concept of purpose, there's another story. It involves John F. Kennedy's first visit to NASA in 1961. And he asked one of the janitors whom he met in the building there what he was doing. And he said, "I am helping send a man to the moon." So this is something we can all carry. It's also something I saw in action in Japan. As some of you may know, if you do business in Japan, the first thing you get is a business card, and it will, and the person will say in Japanese something like, you know, "Boku wa Matsuda Inami desu." I am Mazda's Inami. I am the Mazda company's Mr. Inami. I mean, the first thing is the bigger group, the community, the company. And so this is part of an illustration of how being part of a bigger whole and having that sense, which is so second nature in some countries, including Japan, not so second nature in a country such as the United States. But the more we can integrate some of that thinking, the more it perhaps could improve our overall connectivity to one another. Finally, I'll give an example. As I mentioned, I practiced law for many years, and 90% of my clients were Japanese. And I was on a trade secrets case in Tokyo on one occasion with one of my partners, and we were in a high rise for a meeting, and we looked out of the window, and there was a lot of scaffolding because the windows were being washed. And my partner just stood up and pointed, so he says, "That's it. Just look at that guy. He was washing the window of this building as if he were washing his own glasses." I mean, he had already done the main, whatever you do with the squidgy, but now he had found a spot and he had a small rag and he was working on it. I mean, my partner was so impressed with that. But it is that kind of devotion and that kind of connection, that kind of pride, that if we as leaders, if we feel it and we have a purpose, that's contagious, and we can inspire and instill it in others. So I'm going to, the third exercise is for you, and you know, this could take you a few minutes, so we're not going to stop the show or anything, but just remember to have a piece of paper, maybe when we're done, or now if you can grab one, and write your purpose. What would it be? And keep in mind, it's not one and done. We can adjust our purposes. Some of us we'll get to pacing soon, and pacing is all about a wider lens in our lives and the fact that we all have longer health spans now. We may have 2, 4, 5 careers. And so our purpose with respect to each of those, of course, may adjust as we go. So it's not to find a single purpose. There will be many in our lifetimes, hopefully. So let's move now. That'll conclude the the purpose. Let's move on to pivoting. And pivoting is the idea, first of all, we humans don't like change. We really don't like change. There's something called neural loss aversion. And what we learned from that is, in order for us to make a change, to lose something, we have to think that what we're getting is at least twice as favorable as what we have. That's how much we don't like change. So the irony, of course, and the challenge comes because life is change and things are always changing. So there's one thing called crisis pivoting. For example, we have a pandemic. Well, that forces us to make change. But what I'm more interested in and what I write about in my book is more proactive pivoting. How about that pivoting that change we think about making before we have to make it? And that requires mindfulness, and that requires looking at our purpose. And then with pivoting, like in the game of basketball, we're not completely uprooting ourselves. We still have alongside of us all kinds of resources. We have our network, we have our experience, our skills, our resume, our friends. We have resources. So it can become less intimidating to think about making a change if we consider it a pivot, not a complete and total uprooting of everything, which it is rarely anyway. So it's nice to have this as a framework for our facing changes. Now we're going to move on next to pacing. I want to make sure we have enough time in the end for some questions. And I do have a fourth and final exercise for us. So pacing is taking a longer view. With our purpose in place, you might want to chunk your entire trajectory of your lifetime. Like in this 5-year period, what's most important to me? Is it advancing in my career? Is it tending to my aging parent? Whatever those things are that you have in your life. And that can kind of free you to look at things through a different lens, because we can get pretty goal-oriented and tunnel-visioned when we're pursuing a given, say, track on a corporate track or whatever those various expectations are that we put upon ourselves or that we believe, and in many cases this is true, that a culture or a society puts on us. So it becomes important to pace ourselves and give ourselves a wider lens. I know a lot of us think and treasure balance, but on a personal, for example, when it comes to our personal lives for balance, you may not want to look at just 1 week. I mean, maybe if it's a week when you had a visit to the ER because of something that happened in your family, or, you know, you traveled a lot for work, that wouldn't be the week to say, is my life balanced or not? Give yourself the freedom of saying, I'm going to look at this month. I'm going to look at the whole month of October, and when we get to the 31st, I'll look at the whole thing. And you might be surprised when you give yourself these gifts of time, you'll feel differently about whether there's balance in your life and what it is that's important for you to do right now. So the And the application, of course, in the business world would be to, you know, give your teams enough time. Maybe it's too early to assess the success of a given project or whether or not a given team is the right one. Maybe not 1 week, but a month or 2 months, whatever that might be. But just the pacing part is important. And along with pacing comes the, I mentioned this briefly early on, but the meetings where there were no devices by one of the persons whom I interviewed. But we all can benefit from titrating the tech. I mean, our devices don't come with rules for use. Those are pretty much set within our own individual, family, corporate uses and what is and isn't expected. I mean, there are certain countries, France is one, for example, where I believe there is a rule that an employee may not be expected to look at email after normal business hours. I mean, some of you agree with that and are shaking your heads. And yes, I mean, that makes sense. We don't have rules like that in the US. So it's really up to us as individuals in here or in other places to have the boundaries that we need. Shut off the push notifications. You go to the news. The news doesn't come to you. This sort of thing seems kind of basic, but you can really reclaim a lot of your life, your time, your productivity. Because all of the apps and the online world is vying for your one scarce resource, your attention. And the algorithms, we can experience this for ourselves and know it's true every day. You just want to look at 1 7-minute video and then, oh, the next one's queued up for you. And it's carefully queued up for you. And it's very hard to outsmart the algorithm. So that's another technique for pacing and having the space you might need. Finally, two other things. One is selective neglect. You can't do everything. We can't do it even if we work 24/7. Even if we work better, smarter, faster, we can't. So we have to decide what to let go. And wisdom is not in trying to do everything or doing it in a certain day, but it's knowing what not to do. It's in dropping something every day. And now the final exercise, and this is called the leading with presence exercise. So this will just take us a few seconds because I know we just have a few minutes left. Get into a comfortable position, which I trust you've been in all along, but just adjust yourself as need be. And if the breath is how you would like to center yourself, take a couple of mindful breaths in and out. If you want to listen to the sounds around you, then just listen. Don't seek the sounds, just listen for what comes to you. And now bring to mind those who made it possible for you to be on this Zoom today. There may be people in your company or in your family or in your immediate space that did something to allow you to have this time today. And also bring to mind the people who allow you to do what you do every day. It's in this gratitude that we can find so much peace and calm to replace some of the chaos. Once you identify the persons and once you get a sense of the larger organization, that you might be a small, but believe me, mighty part of, then just sit back for a few seconds with that sense of gratitude. So Stephanie, that concludes that exercise. And my
formal... I nearly got into
staying. There was a lot.
No, it was great. It was wonderful. We have some question, but because of time, I might pick one, if that's okay with you.
Perfect. Yes, let's do it.
Eloy was saying, what's the relationship between purpose and intention for you?
Yes, that's a great question. And purpose is the larger concept. That is, it is what gives our lives meaning, arising out of our values. And it'll have an impact upon others, a positive impact, and give direction to our lives. But intention comes in because we must set our intention to live consistent with our purpose, our intention to take that piece of paper and write down, what is my purpose? It all starts with our intention.
Well, Caroline, it was a pleasure to listen to you. Just to mention to everyone, because some people were asking, I have it here, your book, The Gift of Presence, because what I really like is it's really practical. And as you said, like when you were mentioning a few examples, I was like, this is me. So I think it's really, really important to have, to feel recognized and to have some practical really down to earth examples here. Anything you would like to add before we wrap up? Anything?
Yes. Thank you for that. I'm going to go into my book and I just tabbed something in case I'd have time to share it. I would like to leave everyone with the everyday principles of presence. And there are 7 or 8 of them. It's okay to say no. Change is constant. Now is a good time. Trust what you feel. Self-care is not selfish. Comparison is the thief of all joy. Good friendships are worth the energy. And finally, a small change can make a big difference.
Absolutely. Caroline, Rachel has put all the information where we can find you. Perfect. Anything you would like to add regarding that, like where we can find you, if you have anything like your book, definitely, which is here.
Yes, yes. I think my website, carolinewelch.com, is a good starting point. And then I'm part of the Mindsight Institute with Dr. Dan Siegel. And I'm happy to say that we're launching a new website next week. And we'll have lots of courses. And we not only have online courses, but as soon as we can, we'll have in-person workshops on weekends. So just be in touch. And I would love to hear from you in any way. I know some people connect best on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or email. All of the above are welcome. So it's been my pleasure to be here today, Stephanie, and to be a part of this eclectic and strong program that you have put together.
Thank you very much, Caroline. So just to let you know before we finish that, as you know, we have this conversation, but we have 1,000 of them during 11 days. So if you want to watch this session, you have 48 hours to watch the recordings, and then you can buy the library of the conference to have time to digest and watch other sessions you don't have time to. I think there's special price today. So if you want to take advantage of it, it's there for the conference. And next session is with Dan Siegel. we have within 2 hours. And it was really a pleasure, Caroline, to have you today, and looking forward to talk to you soon.
That's right. They'll be tomorrow, actually, on a panel.
Absolutely. I forgot the panel on women leadership.
That's right. It's going to be so much fun.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.